Buddha, to the Dharma, to the Sangha. When Rinzai Master was explaining the meaning of the Sumeru altar, she said that the altar has this funny shape where you go up in a series of steps to a narrower middle. The steps continually diminish in their length so that it starts out on a broad base and goes up to a narrower middle. And then at the middle of the altar, then it starts to go the opposite direction until the top of the altar is the same width as the base. So it's kind of like hourglass shaped, basically. And she explained it, the meaning of it like this. She said that we can do a certain amount of training through our own effort, and we get to a certain point along the path then, and then we need a deeper faith. And we need faith that there's something greater than ourselves and that we're part of it. And that faith proves to be justified by the fact that we find that we are, as it were, lifted. We're able to do at times what seems impossible for the self to do, spiritually, I mean. I'm not talking about magic powers or anything silly like that. But we're given help from the eternal, from that which is greater than ourselves. And at the higher stages of spirituality are the stages in which one realizes that the greater part of the work is actually being, the heavy lifting is being done by the eternal, not by oneself. If I were to describe the transition in River Master's emphasis in teaching and the deepening of that teaching that happened in 1976, I couldn't have given a better explanation than I just did at the Mount Sumeru altar. It's in 1976 that River Master really found how small she was and how great the Eternal was. Glimpsed many years before, but seen over a long period of time, over a period of months, and in much greater detail, and experienced in many ways in 1976. And that's the point at which her teaching really began to emphasize willingness. Rinzai Master always had an amazingly powerful will. But our own willpower doesn't get us up the overhanging steps of Mount Sumeru. Only the compassion, love, and wisdom of the Eternal can do that. And we, our job is to be willing followers, willing askers, listeners, and followers of the Eternal. When we think of contrition, we tend to think of, you know, recognizing that in some way or other we've been wrong. But contrition can begin with something much subtler, which can be much subtler, and in which it isn't really a matter of right and wrong at all in the way the world thinks of it. And it doesn't even matter of right and wrong the way many truly religious people think of them. It's just a quiet insight into the fact that something that one has invested a good deal of effort in is simply not working. And that clear insight, in a moment of stillness, then becomes the basis for a very great change of heart. Now, the nice thing about this is that it's completely, this insight is completely in harmony with the deepest truth of reality, which is that there is nothing from the first. There is neither good nor evil as the world thinks of them. There is that which is the good beyond good and evil. The eternal itself, the immaculacy of nothingness. And this is the reality of all things. It's the reality of what we think of as our successes. It's the reality of what we think of as our failures. It's the reality of what we think of as our virtues. It's the reality of what we think of as our vices. It's the reality of all things. There's times when we are in harmony with the reality in our thoughts, words, and deeds. There's times when we're not. When we're in harmony with it, we see things that way. Buddha recognizes Buddha. When we're not in harmony with it, Buddha doesn't recognize Buddha. In either case, there's Buddha. In either case, there's Buddha. What we do cannot improve or detract from the eternal. We can, however, help ourselves become less confused or more confused. Less enlightened or more enlightened. And original enlightenment, and think of the original having a capital O and the enlightenment having a capital E here. Original enlightenment, the Buddha nature itself, is the underlying reality of both what we think of as enlightenment and what we think of as unenlightenment. Simply to see that something is working or not working, that simple act has no judgment in it. There need be no judgment of right or wrong, good or evil, more or less, greater or smaller, any of that. Trivial or profound, any of that. It's just, this ain't working. One of the phrases that I think our master must have invented it. I don't know. I'd never heard it before. I've never heard it from anyone else. That one of the teachings, a little kind of short kind of encapsulations of wisdom that she'd sometimes give is, don't be a centipede with washcloths. And I always like that image of centipede with washcloths. When we try to when we find ourselves in the midst of something that isn't working, that we've in some way contributed to either actively or passively, the tendency is to want to get in there and rearrange things externally to make it right. But really, generally speaking, the first thing we need to do is just sit still and accept the way things are. I'm in danger of mixing my metaphors here, but one of the things, the way I think about it, it's kind of like being in a mangrove kind of area of mangroves. If you've ever read about, I don't think I've ever seen mangroves actually, but if you've ever read about these kind of coastal areas where lots of mangroves grow in the tropics, you get in among them and it's just this incredible tangle. And if we find ourselves in an incredible tangle of circumstances sometimes, the tendency is to want to kind of get out the chainsaw or the machete and chop our way out. In so doing, however, we can very easily just chop our way in deeper into the tangled thicket. The first thing we need to do is just, generally speaking, is to sit still. Sometimes I watch the show Survivor Man, and that's his advice. If you find yourself lost in the woods, he says most people tend to panic and start to race around trying to find the path or whatever. He says, if you do that, you won't find it. You'll just get yourself really lost. Loster, if that's possible. He says, sit down. Sit down and start using your head. In meditation, you know, we sit down and allow our heart to speak, our true heart, the capital H, our Buddha nature. And that's what's needed when you find yourself, if you find yourself in a mangrove thicket spiritually. Sit down, sit still, and let the heart start to show the way through the tangle. If we rush in and try to fix it, we will tend to be, and this is coming back to the previous metaphor, tend to try to be a centipede with washcloths, as Red Master said. Think of a centipede, got 100 little legs, more or less, and everyone with a washcloth scrubbing away trying to get something clean. I've done that before, and River Master's caught me at it and gave me that advice personally. It's not just something I heard her do, you know, in talks, which I have heard her use that phrase in talks, but actually she caught me at it, trying to work my way, you know, get everything cleaned up and everything in order and as fast as possible. Well, what got me into the trouble in the first place? Basically the same good intentions, you know, with some other focus, you know. So sometimes the hardest thing to do is just sit still and look up in the middle of the tangle. Then allow the Eternal to show what is the first step one needs to take. What is the first step out of the tangle? And the Eternal will show a way through it. It will be a way that takes time and a way in which we'll have to carefully deal with each thing that rises, with each piece of the tangle, as it is presented to one. There's some pieces that one may never have to get into. A lot of our past karma is like that. If a person, some people can, at any rate, I don't know if everyone can, but some people can kind of, as it were, overpower the natural safety mechanism of forgetfulness of past life karma. And in their zeal to clean it up or in their misguided fascination with it, start digging up out of their kind of the kind of deep store of memory. And think they're making progress when they're actually just spinning their wheels, you know, trudging through a lot of muck that they might never have to deal with in terms of remembering it. Because remembering something is only a small part of the process of conversion. You know, the real work of conversion is done by a combination of our sincere training and the Eternal's, you know, leading us, showing us the way and helping us in many ways. So in any way that we catch ourselves being a centipede with washcloths, the thing to do is just to sit still instead. And if anything needs scrubbing, well, the Eternal will, by us, you know, the Eternal will show us what it is and how to proceed. It takes patience. Above all, it takes faith. Faith that the way will unfold naturally before us as we walk the path. It will unscroll right in front of us. And that, as we walk on, then we see that is a miracle in itself. And a manifestation of genuine grace. That this happens in this way. Another way to put what I'm saying is we never know how much we're helped until we start allowing ourselves to be helped. And to do that, you know, we've got to really sit still and really restrain ourselves when we start to go into guilt and self-judgment or self-justification. These are opposites, self-justification, self-judgment. Just draw out of the opposites, sit still, allow the Eternal to show the way. One of the fundamental points of error, if one thrashes around in that mangrove tangle trying to get out, is that one is not recognizing that the mangrove tangle, the mangrove swamp, itself has the Buddha nature. And that tangle that one finds oneself in of external conditions and internal confusion and pain and grief, whatever it is, it's pretty well always some combination of internal external conditions. That tangle is the potentiality for enlightenment. I've said this many times, but, you know, how does one really come to know it? It's one thing to say it, it's another one to kind of recognize it. And to recognize it, you know, you've really got to get a hold of the will and sit still within it. Sit still within it, as uncomfortable as it is, and as spooky as it is sometimes. Sit still within it, and in that place of sitting still, then to look up. And allow the heart to rise to the Eternal right within that tangle. This is the miracle of suffering, really. The right wrapped up or coiled up within the suffering itself are the seeds of enlightenment. The potential of enlightenment is within the suffering itself. The more we thrash against it or try to scrub it away with droves of washcloths, the more we deny its Buddha nature. Whereas if we'll sit still within the painfulness and confusion of it and the sheer difficulty of it, then our heart naturally rises to the eternal, and then we glimpse that little bright light in the darkness that River Master so often spoke of. The first column. This is the first column. The first of the columns. Our heart rising within the darkness and glimpsing the light of the eternal, just with pure faith. Then we hold fast to that little light. Stick with the stillness, hold fast to that little light. And then in that holding fast to the light, then there's like this opening up of the heart more broadly and deeply to the eternal. And so the offering of everything to the eternal then flows right out of that first of the five columns, and that becomes the second column, you see. The column of offering everything. And in that place of offering everything, then the karmic washing happens. The spiritual washing happens. The washing of the karma by the love and compassion of the eternal. A washing that sometimes is difficult to bear because it can be very painful. And yet, we find that the mind and heart can be bright, still and bright within it, and totally accepting. Then, as one proceeds along this path, when one looks back upon that tangle of internal and external conditions, one sees it in a different way. One then sees its immaculacy. This is not some kind of whitewashing of the past. There is nothing from the first, neither good nor evil, as the world understands them, have reality. There is the immaculacy of no thingness, no separate selfness. The eternal makes good use of everything. And it takes as long as it takes to come to this. Sometimes a seemingly little event, a seemingly little act, will stay hung up, as it were, in the mangrove thicket for many, many years. And then one day out of the blue, it'll cross our mind for the 10,000th time, and this time all conditions will have ripened, and we will be able at last to just present it as a gift to the eternal on the altar of the heart, and to completely accept it. And then this little lump of pain and confusion will undergo its transformation and be seen to be an aspect of Buddhahood. It's common for people to speak of some events as if one can never recover from them. That's not true. There is no spiritual need that the eternal cannot deal with. It just takes time. It takes patience. compassion for oneself and others, and above all, faith. Buddha, Dharma, the Sangha.